Good afternoon. You're listening to another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. I'm your host today, Dylan Samard, and joining me is Senator Gary Stevens. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, Dylan. Just doing fine. Good to be back home. Nice weather today.
Yeah, yeah. Is that what brought you back? You flew in for the weather?
Well, just to check in with folks, let them know what's going on, and talk to several people in town so they know that we're busy trying to get stuff done in Juneau.
Well, sure. Let's get down to brass tacks. What have you guys been up to lately?
Well, of course, we are now started mid-January. We're here mid-February. We've done about 4 weeks. We've got until about mid-May, and that's so we've got about 90 days left. And we're making progress. Several of my bills have been passing through the Senate and onto the House, and anxious to see them make their way to the end. We're working on the budget. That's, of course, the big thing, and working with the governor on several issues. Governor right now, probably the biggest issue for the governor is that he would like to divide the Department of Health and Social Services into two agencies. And we've been listening to that and trying to figure out what the best way to go is, and we'll see where that goes. So it's pretty early to tell how that's really going to turn out, but it's a big issue for the governor, and of course the big issue for us is the budget, to figure out how we're going to spend the money we have and how we're going to pay for bills.
So what's his argument towards the division? I mean, I know there are, like, you know, two names in that one name.
Well,
but
yeah, I did meet with the commissioner, and it's really his idea, Commissioner of Health, and he's in charge of this gigantic organization. I mean, it's the biggest department in the state, and has multiple issues that it's dealing with, and they just feel that it would be good to have two commissioners taking a different approach. You know, one really dealing with health issues, the other one dealing with all the financial issues they have to deal with as well. So it's very complex. It's a very confusing issue. There's no simple answer to it. And we'll just have to see how we're going to approach it. You know, the governor could do it by what's called emergency order. So that's the governor's approach so far, is to do an EO. You know, it is sort of getting into areas that really only the legislature should deal with when it comes to passing the laws, you know. So I'm not sure, honestly, at this point, it's just in question, is an emergency order enough to develop, to divide that department into two parts, or is it going to take a lot of new laws to do that?
Is an emergency order like analogous to an executive order?
Yes, yes, yeah.
I see.
Yeah, and that's really what it is. It is an executive order, and he is moving forward on that. But our attorneys are saying, you know, it's getting into areas that really you need statute to allow you to do some of the things that he would like to do through that executive order. So right at this point, it's up in the air. We'll have to settle it soon before the end of session. We've got 90 days to figure that out.
Sure. I wanted to ask you as well about the legislative citations. I spoke to Doug Letch earlier today about that. I wanted to ask you a bit about the citations that you and Louise Stutes put forward. I believe both of those have been approved in the House and or the four of those, I should say, have been approved in House and Senate both now. I was just wondering what names you put forward and why.
Well, we deal with a lot of citations. You know, certainly one of the biggest number of them has to do with someone passes away, and we recognize people here in Kodiak who've been an important part of the community that we've known. And then also occasionally there's something that you really want to honor somebody who has done a good job and has not passed away. For example, Dr. Ledoux, you know, a great job, I think, I personally think, as our superintendent here. And maybe I shouldn't be saying this. It might be, he may not know it, but we're working on a citation for him. So that often happens, you know, somebody who is retiring or has done a great job, or and then I say the bigger number is always somebody who passes away.
Mm-hmm.
So Louise and I always work very closely on that, and sometimes her office takes the lead on a particular citation, or my office does, and we always co-sign those things.
Right. So what are the four names that you put forward?
I'm not sure what you're talking about, honestly. Citations for what?
The legislative citations, I believe, for four Kodiak residents who recently passed.
Well, let's see. So there's been quite a plethora of them. You know, we did one for, well, let me try and think about that now, but there have been four real recent ones.
And I think these passed like a week and a half, maybe a little more ago.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I can't say right at this moment, but it's someone, people who have done a great job in Kodiak and have passed away. So we pretty much, it's a pretty much an automatic thing. John Witteveen was one who was a former superintendent of schools. And actually, when I was president of the board when he was, the school board when he was a superintendent. And of course, he did a wonderful job. I'm really glad to do John's because, you know, I know his family and wish them well and what they're going through. He died just too young.
Right. I guess transitioning over to some broader topics, one thing that I want to ask you about in the budgeting process, certainly in the last 2 or 3 years, there's been a whole boatload of federal money coming down the pipe, and there still is some. There's still some more to spend. We have the infrastructure bill, for example, that is definitely moving into Alaska's ports and airports and helping to pay for all sorts of infrastructure. What I wanted to ask you about is how the budget is being written relative to, I guess, a year or even 2 years down the line. What's the general sense about what federal money will be looking like as we enter, you know, a post-pandemic period where there's no longer, shall we say, money for the purpose of triage, lack of revenue?
Well, it's been an enormously wealthy year for us. A lot of the money we've gotten from the federal government, we're trying to figure out all of that out. A couple of concerns we have there. We've had folks who wanted to, like, do a project, and they have some money, but they want to use the federal money as a part of a federal grant, and you can't do that. You know, you can only use it once, and so we have to make sure that that's done. We have to make sure that an important thing to me is to make sure that we're not just filling out our normal budget process and therefore being able to use the money elsewhere, when in fact every year we will need those monies again. A good example would be the Marine Highway System. So we've got monies going in. The governor's budget puts monies into the Marine Highway System from the federal government, which really reduces the amount of money the state is putting in. But then in the future years, 2 or 3 years out, we'll have to come back and make sure we have state money in those projects. So that's an issue of significant importance. We've got to make sure that we do our job and the things we have to do, and realize that these federal funds are only, I shouldn't say one time, because there's like a 3 years that we have to use them. But we've got to make sure that it's not supplanting the responsibility the state has to do these things.
I want to ask you as well, so I guess we've talked a little bit about the post-pandemic budget. Are there any sort of laws, for example, that are talking about, I don't know if I'd say necessarily like future pandemic response, but sort of any laws that are being discussed in legislature that sort of examine more intimately the durations of, say, an emergency authorization or like something like a mask mandate? I'm sure there are all sorts of legal questions that are going to be vetted and perhaps more closely examined over the next 3 or 4 years or so around the country as we seem to be heading towards a post-pandemic America.
Well, you're right, and there are lots of bills out there. Some of them will not make it at all. Some may make it through, but the likelihood is that most of them won't. You know, I was just talking to you earlier that in the paper going through Anchorage, it said 75% of Americans will be safe from this newest virus. They'll be either have had it, the virus that protects them, or they will have gotten vaccinated. So a 75% figure is pretty amazing. So that really means to me that, well, I shouldn't say we're out of the woods yet, but it seems like we're nearing that point where things might return to normal and our governments can function
the way
they're supposed to. Absolutely, knock on wood. Yeah. So that's looking very good. Now, there are a lot of bills out there. You know, honestly, there are bills that that go too far one way or the other. And, you know, our job is to protect the public as much as we can and not to interfere with what people want. I mean, I get a lot of emails from people saying, you need to pass a bill that says that I don't have to get a vaccine if I don't want one. We're never going to do that. I mean, the legislature will never pass a bill that says you have got to get the vaccine. That's your choice. And you make that choice and you live with the consequences. So that is not going to happen in the state of Alaska. We'll never have a vaccine mandate. state. I hope folks understand that. But on the other hand, we want to make sure that people are safe and that everyone can, you know, can safely live their life and not have to deal with this vaccine. And as I'm sure you know, I mean, friends and neighbors and people you're close to have, who you'd never think, you know, would come down with a coronavirus have. And we've all been trying to be safe, but frankly, things happen that are out of your control and, you know, it happens to so many people.
Right.
But fortunately, it's not as bad as it was. But on the other hand, you know, we have to realize that we have lost over 1,000 people in Alaska. You know, under 1 million people in Alaska. We've lost over 1,000 to this disease who've died. And I just think almost every meeting we have, we should stop and say, let's just have a moment to think of those 1,000 people that may have been here had it not been for that that virus.
I am curious to see how, if there's going to be some sort of moment of national mourning, because it is true, like a very statistically significant number of people have died, not just from COVID. I mean, you know, the overdose deaths, like deaths of despair, such as, you know, addiction, suicide, things of that nature. And then, of course, just, I mean, the little rituals, how many people have given up, you know, high school graduations, retirement parties, I mean, I didn't have an in-person college graduation, for example, and I just saw a Facebook post the other day. One of the guys in my class who graduated was saying that Arizona State, which is where I went to school, they're inviting everybody back to go and walk at the 2022 graduation. So,
well, that's great. You should do that. I mean, it's important. It's a significant time in life, and it's nice to have that memory of that ceremony. And so I do also serve on the suicide prevention committee statewide, and it's just shocking the number of well, not just young people, but adults that that take their own lives, and that has just zoomed up, you know, in these last few years. And it's hard to know what to do about it. You know, we can try to make people aware of it and try to help them through tough times. But, you know, it's just a very difficult problem that we have not solved.
Right. Are there any sort of, like, ways that the state is looking at addressing any of these things? Or is there sort of a sense that, you know, deaths of suicide and addiction are going to decrease as we become more of a post-pandemic country?
Well, you know, we are very involved in that, and we are trying to find ways to solve it through education, mainly with the issue of suicide, and helping folks understand what it means. I mean, for a young person, they may not see the seriousness of it, you know, as an older person might. And of course, in those who are left behind have to deal with the issues that they have to deal with, maybe guilt. And so, yeah, I think we've opened up a whole lot of psychological issues that people have to deal with, and we can help in some way and have, you know, through various programs the state has.
So are there any other particular bills that this is sort of a strange question, but there are always I used to do a little bit of political reporting in Arizona, and I haven't been examining the Alaska legislative session as closely as I did back in Arizona, but I remember that they would get all these, I mean, dare I say, wackadoodle bills that would be proposed that would absolutely go nowhere. I was just wondering if you had any favorites from this legislative session or any sort of outliers in their unique concept.
Of wacky bills. Well, that's interesting. There are a lot of serious ones. For some reason this year, I have several really serious bills that I think are important and are going to pass. One is on fisheries and helping.
We can talk about those first and then go back to the wacky ones.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think of the real wacky ones. You know, the wacky ones just don't make it through.
I know, but they're fun. But sure, let's start with the most serious topics then that are affecting the state. I know that, for example, our own Kirsten Dobroth, the other reporter here at KMXT, just did a story on the fisheries disaster declaration. I just heard the story not long ago. She was talking about how the state of Alaska actually has a harder time than other states getting some of those emergency payments I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, the problem is that we don't have control of that, and I wish there were a way that they would, the feds would maybe provide that money through the Department of Fish and Game, through the governor's office, so we can address those emergencies out there. There are several disasters, a lot of fisheries disasters in the last couple of years, and it creates enormous problems. And the problem, the biggest problem, is getting those monies to the fishermen who need them and who deserve them. And it just takes a lot of time. It shouldn't take that much time. So we're working with the federal government and trying to find a solution to that. We've had actually the department made a big report just a couple of days ago to the House. I didn't hear that, but to the House Fisheries Committee. And the difficulties they're having in getting a hold of those monies and getting them out to the people at the right time, you know, it's we're just too far away from Washington, D.C. It's hard to get their attention, but we're trying to do that. We're trying to make sure that that we get those monies out quicker rather than later.
So, moving away from that topic, what are some of the other serious bills that you have been looking at for this legislative session? How are they doing? Where are they? And where do you think they'll end up?
Well, let's see. The bill that there's a couple that I am very fond of my bills. One has to do with a fish tax, helping processors when they go into new lines of product, in which it's worked really well in the past. I was a part of it in 2002, I think, when we passed a salmon enhancement task force that passed a bill and had it passed that really gave credit to processors when they went into a new line of product. Maybe in that case, at that time, it was doing more filleting of salmon and freezing and selling it in the fillet instead of having it canned. So that made a real important distinction and really helped the industry raise the prices to the fishermen and raise the prices that the processors could charge. So it really helped everyone. So the bill that we've done this year is to extend that for salmon, but also to add pollock and cod and black cod. So that's been very supported by the industry, by fishermen, by processors, and I think it'll make a real difference in the future. And maybe not the near future, but maybe in a couple of years, we'll see those funds being used. We don't receive quite so much taxes from the industry, but those monies have to go into equipment that they can use here in Alaska and only use here in Alaska. Another bill that is, and that's now, so that passed out of Senate Finance is now on the House side. Another bill that just passed out has to do with the whole issue of citizenship and requiring students, requiring districts, and requiring the department to make sure that we have taught kids what it means to be an American citizen. And I think what we found is there have been lots of studies that have shown that often young people just becoming of age to vote really have no idea of what the government is and how it works and how they are a part of it. So that whole idea of civics education is really important. We just passed it out of the Senate. It'll go to the House. And it's not a, you know, one of the fears people had is that it would be a very strict, high requirement that you couldn't graduate from high school unless you pass the civics exam. And the civics exam is one that we give new citizens, so it's not as if it's particularly hard. And but the bill says you have to pass with a 70% out of 100 questions, 70 out of 100. But it does allow a person to take it multiple times. So, you know, that's one thing I believe about education is if you take a test, if you get it wrong, you figure out why, and next time you take it, you get it right. So I don't really care how many times a young person has to take it, as long as they pass it in the end by 70%. So it's not a high bar, and it's not a high stakes, you know, to graduation at all. It just requires us. It requires the districts and the state board of education to come up with a plan. They will write our own Alaska questions. There will be some Alaska questions. There'll be some Alaska Native questions in there. So it's all very good. And actually, you know, our district is doing a fine job teaching civics education, and many districts are. But unfortunately, some are not. Some just haven't taken the time to do that. So I think it's an important bill. I'm glad that is on its way. Let's see. There's another bill that we just introduced to Senate, to Finance Education Committee, made it through the Senate. And that has to do with giving a quicker response to, spouses of Coast Guardsmen who come to Kodiak and are certificated teachers in other states, but the way our rules read, they have to wait often a year before they get permission to teach in our district. Now, we know they are certificated. They have taught in other places. They have the what they need to be a good teacher. So this gives them a very quick access to those jobs, but it also requires them within an amount of time, 3 months in one case, actually a year in another case, to do the various things that our Alaska teachers have to do to pass the understanding suicide, for example, one thing, understanding Alaska history for another thing, you know. So it does allow them to come into the district very quickly. And actually, you know, having been in the military myself for 3 years, I know how difficult it is to take a job somewhere else for, say, a Coast Guardsman, and knowing that maybe their spouse could not get a job,
right,
badly needed. So
that is very interesting, because I spoke to Larry Ledoux not long ago. I was doing a story on staffing shortages that they were having in, as far as teachers and substitutes goes, and he told me that they had a pretty high degree of reliance on Coast Guard spouses who would come into the community and just start teaching as soon as they could, I suppose.
Well, and you know, we've got a large Coast Guard base out there, and I think the latest figures I heard is going to increase from 500 to 900 Coast Guard people. And,
yeah, that's with the new cutters, correct?
Right. So that could bring in a lot more people, a lot more spouses who have taught in other places and are qualified teachers and want to teach. So this is a simple bill, and it'll do that and help things out.
So I suppose then, if you're ready, I'd love to transition to some of the wackadoodle bills.
Yeah, okay. If you have a wackadoodle one, let me know. I cannot recall anything too crazy right now, but can you think of something?
Oh, I'm trying to remember. There was a... I don't think the guy won, but Arizona politics would just have some real oddballs in there. I remember in Arizona, for example, there's an elected state mine commissioner, and we had a guy who ran and did like remarkably well on a platform that there were too many vampires that were living in Arizona's mines, and he promised to clear the mines out so that it would be safe for children to play in copper mines, which I should point out, very unsafe place for anybody to be, let alone children.
Yeah. Well, we have our share, I know. The Senate is a little more staid, or a little more mature, a little older, and I don't see any crazy things coming through the Senate. As chairman of the Rules Committee, it's my job to make sure that anything gets to the floor can pass to start with, and
right,
has the support it needs, and that it makes sense, and that it not be too crazy, you know. But no, I don't think we've dealt with anything too wild in the Senate. The House has a little more diversity, and several members over there that are more interested in just stopping the business of the legislature. So,
sure.
Honestly, I don't recall any wackadoodles, as you say, this year. There probably are, but...
All right. Well, to that end, then, let me ask you another question about elections.
Right.
The state election rules have changed.
They have.
Would you go so far as to make any sort of predictions about how that might change the character of, you know, politicians and who's getting elected aside? Do you think that type of election system might change the bills that we're seeing and the, shall we say, the buffers or stoppers that keep them from passing?
Well, that's really interesting. We're all, everyone in the legislature is trying to figure this out, you know, now that we've gone to a different system where there is no Republican or Democrat primary. You know, everyone runs in the primary, and the top four voters then go on to the next step in the general election. So it's, you know, what I'm seeing, honestly, Dylan, is several legislators who are probably not going to run, and for various reasons. I better not name any names, but
sure.
I think actually Senator Von Imhoff has announced that she's not going to run. She's been a valuable member of the Finance Committee, and so she's not going to run because of issues with her family, health problems that they're having, and so that's a loss. I don't know who's going to replace her, obviously. So what does it really mean if we go to that form of election? Well, first it means that this is my 22nd year. I don't know how many elections I've gone through. But generally, when people run in a primary with a Republican primary or a Democratic primary, if you're in a Republican primary, pretty much you stress those far right things in the election in the primary. But then in the general, you want to, you want to appeal to a broader group of that may include Democrats and independents. So that's generally been the rule, you know, for Republicans who run to the right in the primary, run to the center in the election. It's going to be quite different because without a Republican primary, I think you'll find more moderates, you know, and just be totally honest with you. I've been a Republican all my life, but I consider myself a moderate Republican. I want to make things work. I want to be practicable about these things, and have not really bought into the far right, issues like, say, the governor has. So, so it's going to change things considerably. And we'll see. We don't really know. You know, Maine has done it, and cities have done it. Many cities have had that type of an election. I'm anxious to see how it turns out, but it's going to be different.
Right. Well, I think I just saw a few days ago there was a New York Times op-ed that was talking about how Alaska is soon to undergo a experiment insofar as its democracy goes, one that may or may not have a big impact on different states around the country. So I guess really I'm
well, to comment on that, you know, I got a call in my office in Juneau from a fellow here in Kodiak that said, you idiots, why did you pass this type of election? You're not thinking. This is the wrong thing to do. And I had to remind them that the legislature didn't pass that. That was a vote of the public. Mm. The public at the last general election in November decided that we would do this. And it's their decision, and that'll be the law. It is the law of the land, and we will run those elections based on what the public wants. That doesn't mean that it'll always stay that way. If it just didn't work out, there was a disastrous situation, and people were very upset about it, the legislature in 2 years can change that. But it's unlikely, you know, that we will, because that's what the public wants. So, again, the fellow who called and said it was our fault that we had that election process. It's not. It was the vote of the public in November.
Okay, well, we're down to just about our last minute or so. Is there anything else that you'd like to get before we close out for today?
Well, I guess a big thing that I've been dealing with, and it's sort of a long term, it's not immediate, and that's the Constitutional Convention. You know, in November, folks will have an opportunity to vote on whether we want to have a Constitutional Convention. We've had them in the past. We had one, and that was when we became a state, and at that time we wanted to impress the Congress so that they would allow Alaska to become a state, so we wrote a really beautiful constitution. I hate to see it change, but the voters will have that opportunity, and if they vote to have that change, then to write a constitutional convention, a new one, to have a constitutional convention and write a new constitution, then that's what we'll do. It's a long, drawn-out process. It begins in this November with an election. Do you want a constitutional convention? 2 years later, there will be an election on who's going to represent you, who are the 555 or so members that are going to go to that convention. And 2 years after that, you'll have the new constitution in front of you. You can vote yes, no, or change some things and not other things. So it's a very complicated and long-term thing. I personally don't like the idea because I like our current constitution. And realize that if there's anything wrong with the Constitution right now, we can change it by an amendment. The legislature can pass an amendment to change the Constitution.
What way do you see the wind blowing for that?
Well, I do think that the biggest issue out there is going to be the permanent fund dividend.
Right.
I think if we don't address that, and I really hope we will address that this session, make that decision on how much more there's going to be. We're the state is in very good shape. I'll be glad to talk about that later, but very good shape. And so we can afford to add an addition to that that dividend and still be safe and still not overdraw the permanent fund and still not have to go to an income tax or a sales tax and still pay for the government that people want, education and police protection and prisons and all those sorts of things. Actually, we're in remarkable shape as long as we don't go too far.
Right.
If we go too far with the permanent fund dividend, then there will have to be a way to pay for government after that. But so I think that's an issue. If we don't solve that here before the end of this session, I think the public may very well might decide that we want a constitutional convention. And if that happens, it's going to be a bar of the door. Anything can be in that constitution.
Sure thing. Well, Gary, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate your time. This has been another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. I was your host today, Dylan Simard, and joining me was Gary Stevens, Senator for Kodiak. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Dylan.